held a massive shield made from the same metal as its armor, with the other carrying a wicked-looking mace. Staring at it in momentary awe, an identifying tag appeared in my vision. Aetherbound Knight, Boss, Level 15. Damn, I cursed, my mind immediately going into overdrive. We had known very well that there was a good chance that we would be up against a boss-ranked enemy during this fight, but none of us had even dreamed that we would be facing three of them at once. Forcing myself to stay calm as I assessed the sudden change in battle, I shifted my eyes from the Aerovian Knight and towards its partner walking in sync beside it. The first thing that I noticed was that it was substantially lighter armored than the Knight, its armor namely being a metal cuirass protecting its chest, with a flexible layer of chainmail extending out to cover the rest of its body. Its head was encased in an open-faced helmet, the black silhouette of the skull within its emerald flames giving it a deeply sinister appearance. Armed with only a short, double-edged blade in its left hand, its remaining hand was empty and poised high at its side, as if it were waiting for the right moment to cast a spell. Gazing at the creature as it advanced, another helpful tag appeared in my vision. Aetherbound Battle Mage, Boss, Level 15. Trace! We need help on this side! I shouted, turning my body to run towards the group, seeing that in addition to attracting the two boss creatures, Amaranth in particular had managed to catch the attention of the two aetherbound soldiers he had attacked earlier, and was slowly being driven backward from their combined assault.
One second!
Drace called from behind me, just as a loud shout from Lazarus and another thunderclap of magic filled the chamber.
Okay, maybe two!
Rushing forward, I approached the two aetherbound soldiers from behind, glancing around urgently for the third boss creature that Constantine had warned us about, but not seeing it anywhere nearby. Putting it out of my mind for the moment, I focused my attention on relieving the pressure on my familiar and thrust Splinter deep into one of the soldiers' back as I re-entered combat, the charred armor giving way under the impact. I felt the blade grate against metal before it pierced through into nothingness, the burning azure flames comprising the inner part of the undead creature's body providing no resistance to the sword's intrusion. But despite the creature no longer being one of flesh and blood, it recoiled in pain from the blow, a burst of magic seeping free from the rent in its armor.
I think the armor and bones are helping contain the magic that's animating it,
I sent to Amaranth as I pulled my blade free and delivered a second stab to the creature, this one higher up its body.
Try to rend its armor or crush its skull!
Easier said than done,
my familiar growled back at me as he swiped a massive paw at the other soldier threatening him, succeeding only in knocking it off balance after striking it in the hip.
Its armor resists my claws.
Then bite this one,
I shouted back mentally as I pulled Splinter out of my target's back for a second time and then kicked it in the back of the knee, sending the wounded soldier down to one knee. Without a second's hesitation, Amaranth pounced forward, his jaws closing down on the ether-bound Aerovian skull that was floating within its emerald flames. A loud crunch of bone then echoed through the air, a heartbeat afterward, followed by the now empty armor falling to the ground with a thump.
How hard was that?
I shot to Amaranth, just as Drace came rushing past us, not even bothering to stop to attack the one still standing ether-bound soldier, instead choosing to simply trample it, using his massive bulk to simply bull it out of his way and knock it down as he charged directly towards where I'd last seen the Knight.
Move!
I heard Drace shout ahead of him as he ran, followed shortly after by the ring of metal on metal.
Get him back and heal him, Lear! I could use your help up here!
Coming!
I yelled back at the warrior, Amaranth and I already moving to attack the soldier that had fallen to the ground before it managed to regain its feet. Moving with blinding speed, Amaranth leaped onto the fallen soldier's back, his weight pinning it to the ground, giving me the opportunity to bring Splinter down on its skull, having long since deduced that destroying it was the most efficient way to put an end to the creature. Bringing my sword down on the skull twice, I sent large cracks spiraling through the bone, until Amaranth pounced forward and bit into it, his powerful jaw effortlessly crushing the soldier's head and causing the emerald flames to wink out. These aetherbound soldiers are little more than trash mobs, I thought to myself as I rushed to Drace's aid, leaving Amaranth to deal with yet another of the soldiers that had finally rounded the floating crystal and was heading towards us. The sole purpose of the weaker creatures seemed to only be a distraction, forcing us to spend time dealing with them instead of focusing our attacks on the more dangerous Knight and Battle Mage. As I ran, I was forced to detour around a burnt-looking Constantine, who was sitting on the ground and clutching at a visibly broken knee, while an also-singed Alistair desperately tried to heal it.
Watch the Knight, Lear!
Constantine shouted as I ran past the pair.
He is fast and hits hard. The battle mage has instant spells, too.
Great! I called back, seeing that Drace was not only squaring off with the knight, but had managed to catch the attention of the battle mage as well. Which I suppose is actually his job, being the party tank, I added mentally, as I decided to focus my attention on the battle mage, feeling that I was better equipped to fight a magic-using enemy, rather than one covered in nothing but heavy armor. Coming up on the right! I shouted, giving Drace a heads-up as to which side I was going to take. Then I immediately slashed at the battle mage with a shocking touch-charged splinter as a way of greeting, the blade sparking along its armor as it discharged into the creature.
Lazarus is managing both the other knight and soldiers right now, Drace told me without any preamble. So we need to hurry the hell up with these two and give them support before it steamrolls him and the others. There are two of these knights?
I replied in shock, barely catching the battle mage's sword on Splinter's edge as it shifted its attention towards me.
Yep!
Drace bellowed as he absorbed a punishing blow on his shield from the knight's mace, using the opportunity to stab the tip of his sword into the armor protecting its knee, drawing forth a small flare of magic from the wound.
So if you have any ideas on how to kill these things fast, I'm all ears! Destroy their heads,
I said without hesitation, exchanging another set of blows with the battle mage, which resulted in the both of us scoring minor wounds on one another.
How the hell do you suggest we do that?
Drace barked in frustration, punctuating his point by slamming his sword into the side of the knight's head with no visible reaction.
Have you even seen this guy's helmet? Figure something out,
I spat back hurriedly, seeing a bright crimson ball of fire begin to form in the battle mage's free hand. Reacting at the speed of thought, I instinctively reached out with my free hand towards the spell that the battle mage was conjuring, only able to execute the reckless maneuver because it held its sword in its left hand. Had I been facing a right-handed opponent, reaching across my body to try what I'd just done would have likely resulted in me getting injured. Or even more likely, the loss of my entire hand. In this case, however, the move caught the creature completely off guard, my hand thrusting through the partially formed spell and grabbing hold of the battle mage's hand. No sooner did I tighten my grip on the hand did a wave of mana travel up my arm as I interrupted the creature's magic, causing the tiny ball of fire it was holding to fizzle and fade out of existence. Instantly, I felt a wave of panic surge through the battle mage as it realized what I had done, and it desperately began to thrash in my grip with surprising strength. Refusing to let go, I yanked on the creature's hand in an attempt to send it off balance, using the opportunity to thrust yet another shocking touch-charged splinter into its shoulder, piercing through the thinner layer of chainmail where it joined with the cuirass. My efforts were rewarded by a bright spurt of azure energy as the power that was animating the battle mage bled out from the armor containing it. Almost immediately, the creature's sense of panic turned into a complete frenzy as I continued to drain mana from it, its sword swinging wildly through the air as it tried to force me to let go, cutting out viciously towards my face and eyes. Pulling Splinter free of its shoulder, I instinctively moved to intercept the sweeping blade and ducked my head away from the coming attack, only to have the battle mage suddenly redirect its arm and send the point of the weapon straight into my forearm, burying its short blade nearly to the hilt. I couldn't help but cry out in pain as the battle mage then twisted the weapon into my flesh, feeling the edges of the blade grind against the bones in my arm. Sheer animal instinct demanded that I try to pull my arm away from the source that was causing me pain, but it was now my turn to find my hand being held in place, the battle mage having decided that losing some mana was an acceptable price to pay in exchange for crippling one of my arms. Snarling from the pain, I repeatedly hammered Splinter into the side of the battle mage's head in a panic, not bothering to conserve any mana in the process. Sparks of electricity shot into the air as my blade slammed into the creature's helmet. Showing no reaction from my assault, the battle mage stoically maintained its tight grip on my arm and tugged sharply on the blade, causing a spray of blood to pour free from the widening wound. Feeling my arm go numb from the pain, I readied myself to shout at Drace for help when Amaranth's head shot into my vision, his jaw clamping down on the battle mage's arm, teeth sinking in deep into the chainmail sleeve. The big cat then snapped its head backward, the motion causing the battle mage's weapon to pull itself free of my flesh. Gasping at the sudden relief, I reflexively brought my wounded arm close to my chest while delivering a vengeful chop into the undead Irovian shoulder, directly on top of the wound I had inflicted earlier and widening it in the process.
Thanks!
I called out to Amaranth mentally as my familiar bit down even harder on the battle mage's arm and held it in place, effectively rendering the creature's weapon useless. Taking advantage of the gap in the battle mage's defenses, I thrust out with Splinter directly towards its face, hoping that I could land a heavy enough blow to put an end to it. Unfortunately, however, the battle mage had other ideas. Shifting its head upwards, it accepted my stab directly across its jawline, splinter's edge obliterating nearly an entire row of teeth as it deflected off bone and sank ineffectually into its mouth, instead of the eye socket that I had originally aimed it at. Without any visible reaction of pain, the battle mage then unleashed a sudden burst of flame from its free hand, bathing Amaranth's head in fire and forcing the cat to release his hold on the arm in its mouth. Amaranth's snarl echoed through both my mind and ears as he pulled away from the battle mage's flames and rubbed his face with a paw, seeking to put out the burning bits of fur that had caught fire from the battle mage's attack.
Whoa!
I let out a yelp and barely deflected an unexpectedly fast slash from the battle mage's short sword as it regained control of its arm. Forced to take a step backward from the battle mage as it renewed its attack, I exchanged another pair of blows with the creature before it suddenly decided to disengage from Amaranth and me, reversing its advance and leaping away from us. Pausing for a heartbeat, I reflexively scanned the area around me for an incoming threat that would have caused the undead Arovian to retreat, but found nothing. The closest thing being Constantine and Alistair having fallen beside Drace and had their attention focused on fighting the knight.
What is it doing?
I asked myself, the thought barely having enough time to form in my mind before the battle mage suddenly vanished in a brief flare of magic, leaving Amaranth and I standing by ourselves.
Shit!
I cursed in frustration as I spun around and scanned the room urgently, recognizing the spell that the creature had used as being something akin to Blink Step, the battle mage having decided to go look for an easier set of targets, rather than allow Amaranth and I to continue double-teaming it. I'd barely begun to move before a pained scream filled the air, echoing out from somewhere behind me, which was followed by a surprised shout and the clang of metal on metal.
Halcyon is down!
Caius's voice called out in a panic.
We need help over here now!
Completing my turn, I looked in the direction of Caius's voice and spotted the battle mage standing right in between Sierra and Caius, the pair caught completely off guard by its unexpected appearance. In the split second that it had teleported away from me, the battle mage had managed to cross the length of the room and stab Halcyon in the back, the mage now writhing on the floor and clutching at a bloody wound at its feet.
Help Drace and the others kill the knight,
I told Amaranth, forcing my body to move towards the other half of the group.
I'm gonna help the others in the meantime.
Grunting in acknowledgement, Amaranth didn't bother with a mental reply, choosing instead to rush past me as the two of us began to move in opposite directions. Taking only a single step forward to give myself some momentum, I picked a spot near the battle mage in the distance and triggered Blink Step. A mixture of azure light filled my vision as I crossed the room in an instant, appearing right on the creature's left flank, just as it raised its sword to strike at Sierra, who had just dropped her bow and was in the process of drawing her sword. Hoping to buy her the time that she needed to finish the motion, I brought Splinter heavily onto the battle mage's already wounded shoulder, splitting the gaping rent in its armor even wider and spoiling its attack. As I drove the blade into the wound, I began to absorb the battle mage's mana through Splinter, feeling the familiar cool wave of energy course into me.
Lear!
Sierra shouted in surprise at my timely intervention, just as the sound of her sword leaving its scabbard reached my ears.
Try and hack its arm off!
I called out to the woman without any preamble, seeing that my latest blow had managed to seriously damage the chainmail connecting the sleeve of the battle mage's armor to the rest of its body, and that the emerald energy stored within had begun to flare out in spurts.
I think the armor is containing whatever's animating it. If we damage it enough, it'll die. Works for me!
Sierra shouted back as the two of us fell into a practiced pattern, effectively pinning the battle mage between us, the undead creature having spun to keep the both of us in its vision, its burning visage somehow managing to display annoyance at the tactic.
Caius, get Hal out of the way! He's gonna get stepped on here!
I'm on it, the warlock replied a heartbeat later. But he's gonna need healing, which means you're gonna have to distract that thing for me to life tap afterward.
Just warn us when you're ready,
I yelled as the battle mage finally managed to twist its way out from between Sierra and me, our blades carving a pair of gashes in its armor as it did so. Falling in before us with its sword held high, the battle mage now streamed an almost constant flow of magic from its body where its armor had been damaged, the largest of the rents still being the one on its left shoulder. Appearing less solid than it had earlier in the battle, I could tell that the wounds had taken a toll on the battle mage, the emerald energy that was animating it having greatly dimmed in intensity. It hasn't cast any spells in a while, I thought, noticing how much weaker the fire encasing the battle mage's head had become, and that its skull hovering within was slowly becoming more distinct than it had been earlier in the fight.
I think it's running out of energy, and a few more solid hits should do it.
Eager to put an end to at least one of the boss creatures, I lunged forward recklessly with Splinter, putting complete faith that Sierra would cover any openings in my guard if things didn't go according to plan.
Feinting high with the blade, I purposefully moved slowly enough to draw the battle mage's sword upwards as if I were going to bring it down on his head, only to, at the last second, pull it away and bury the flaming dagger that I'd conjured in my free hand straight into the battle mage's stomach. Feeling my injured arm scream in pain at the movement, I forced myself to hold on to the molten blade until the spell ended and it dissipated back into nothingness. No sooner did the blade vanish than yet another burst of magic erupted from the now gaping wound in the battle mage's stomach, causing it to stagger as it belatedly swept its sword down in an attempt to slash at my now retreating hand. Not one to pass up an opportunity, Sierra's blade came crashing down on the battle mage's shoulder, the blow catching the already weakened section of armor and tearing it completely free from the cuirass. Almost instantly, the ether-bound creature's arm vanished as the energy animating it was cut off, the ruined sleeve of armor now hanging limply by its side. "I'm ready!" Kaius's voice called out, sounding weak despite the urgency behind his words. "Just..." A loud grunt of pain, followed by a crash of metal, interrupted the rest of the warlock's words as Lazarus's body visibly tumbled into my vision over the battle mage's wounded shoulder. Taking in his appearance at a glance, I saw that the half-giant's body had been almost completely pulverized, his armor battered and dented, with several gashes in the metal streaming a steady flow of blood. "Lazarus is down, and the knight is loose!" I shouted, remembering what Drace had said earlier and that Lazarus had been single-handedly keeping the other boss creature at bay. The key words in that statement being "had been," his ragged and broken appearance clearly indicating that the knight had finally managed to get the better of him, which meant that it was likely coming this way. "Sierra, take care of this guy for Kaius," I ordered, making a snap decision as I threw myself forward into the now literally disarmed battle mage, slamming my shoulder into his chest and hooking a foot around its ankle. With a shove, I pushed past the weakened Erovian and tripped it for Sierra and Kaius to finish off, knowing that I had to find the other knight before it caught up to Lazarus and finished him off. "Where is it?" I thought in a frenzied panic, glancing briefly at Lazarus once more and seeing that he hadn't moved since he had fallen to the ground. Tearing my eyes off the injured half-giant, I scanned the chamber, in the direction I'd seen him come tumbling from, logically assuming he'd been thrown backward. My hunch immediately paid off as I turned my head towards the floating crystal that centered the room, which was now partially blocked as the large and heavily armored knight came into view, slowly plodding forward with its attention fixed directly on Lazarus. Appearing identical to the other knight that Drace had been fighting, this particular knight visibly displayed several large scars and gashes in its armor that streamed a steady flow of magic as it moved, the wounds a testament to how hard Lazarus must have fought against the creature. Without a second's hesitation, my feet angled themselves towards the ether-bound knight, quickly building momentum with every step that I took. Analyzing the magically fueled entity with a practiced eye, I glanced over the wounds that Lazarus had inflicted upon it, trying to find a weakness that I could exploit. Two large gashes across the torso, I noted to myself, time slowing down all around me as I sprinted forward. Probably too hard for me to cut through, though. I took another step towards the knight. "Knee could be a weak spot," I continued, my gaze dropping downwards to see a puncture wound in the side of the being's left leg just above the joint. Destroying that could slow it down. The knight's head began to shift in my direction as my foot hit the ground once more. "Armor on its shield arm looks..." My train of thought instantly stopped as the creature completed its turn, its helmeted head revealing a long rent that burned with a bright azure fire. Fixing my attention on the tear in the armor, I could see a faint glimpse into the burning flames within, catching sight of the undead Erovian's skull. "There!" I exclaimed within my mind, feeling my heart race with excitement as I focused my attention on the gap in the knight's armor, a plan of attack falling into place. Casting a glance upwards towards the ceiling, I checked to see if I would have enough room to pull off what I was hoping to do, and was happy to see that the chamber had plenty of space to work with. Gritting my teeth as I took yet another step towards the knight, I mentally rehearsed what I was about to attempt, pushing aside the distant voice that told me just how reckless it was. "I think the situation calls for reckless at this point," I told myself dryly, carefully timing my upcoming maneuver while simultaneously trying to ignore the wicked axe that the knight was holding in its hand. "Here goes nothing!" Flicking the fingers on my still injured arm, I cast jump on myself, instantly feeling my body become lighter as I ran. Taking two more bounding steps as I closed the distance between the knight and me, I made sure to build up enough momentum for what I was about to attempt. Then, on my third step, I leaped high into the air, twisting my body into a corkscrewing flip that would have caused an Olympic gymnast to go green with envy. Sailing directly over the stunned knight as I spun through the air, I swung Splinter downwards with all the strength that I had in my arm, aiming the ether-touched blade directly at the open scar in its helmet.
Completely surprised by the maneuver, there was little the knight could do to avoid the blow, my sword finding the gap in the helmet and biting deep into the skull housed within. Feeling the impact travel up my arm, I continued in the arc that my momentum had committed me to, my vision twisting wildly as I completed my flip and landed back on my feet behind the knight.
I can't believe that worked!
I thought in amazement, moving from the spot that I'd landed and glancing at the message that had appeared in my combat log. You power attack 2 an ether-bound knight for 126 points of damage. Happy to have confirmed that I had indeed managed to hurt the knight, I dismissed my combat log and focused on putting some distance between me and the creature, knowing all too well what it was going to do next. Moving as if my very life depended on it, which, in hindsight, I knew it did. I planted my left foot on the ground hard, then pushed off on it, sending me leaping to the side and towards the dais that the large crystal was set on. Just in time to avoid the knight's axe as it came down on the spot that I'd just been standing. The crunch of metal on stone echoed through the chamber as my leap carried me away from the knight, who had recovered even faster than I'd anticipated, spinning around with a vicious attack that would have crippled me had it connected. Pushing back a sense of creeping doubt as I realized that my margin for error was now even slimmer than I had originally thought, I felt my right foot touch down on the side of the dais, the attached leg bending briefly as it absorbed the energy from my leap, then sprang forth, sending me flying back towards the knight. Aided by the jump spell, I angled myself to slide across the ground, my trajectory carrying me past the now turned around knight for a second time. Timing the attack carefully as I re-entered melee range, I slashed across my body with splinter, targeting the blade directly for the armored Orovian's wounded knee. Aided by momentum and the already damaged armor around the joint, my sword easily bit through the metal, widening the tear that Lazarus had inflicted earlier until it stretched completely around the back of the knight's knee. As I continued my slide, now moving past the knight, I caught a brief glimpse of magic out of the corner of my eye, followed by the sound of something heavy falling to the ground. Coming to a stop just outside the knight's range, I forced myself back up onto my feet and twisted to look back towards the undead Orovian, seeing the heavily armored creature now kneeling on the ground. That should hopefully buy us some time to regroup, I thought, letting a small breath of relief escape my lips, only to have it cut off as the knight pushed itself back up onto its feet. On second thought, maybe not. Watching the knight rise, I noticed the constant stream of magic pour free from the wound that I'd inflicted on its knee, the injury visibly affecting it as it tried to maintain its balance, but not managing to cripple it as I'd hoped. Not wanting to wait until the knight finished climbing back up to its feet, I instinctively rushed back towards it, intent on inflicting as much damage as I could before the opportunity was lost. Sparks flew from Splinter's edge as I channeled a shocking touch in the blade and leaped forward with the weapon outstretched. Caught half-risen from his kneeling position, I had a near-perfect shot to drive the blade through the damaged portion of the knight's helmet and into the skull housed within. Unfortunately for me, however, that opportunity vanished as the knight unexpectedly turned its head, taking Splinter's edge off an undamaged section of the helmet and leaving my arm throbbing from the force of the blunted blow. Oh, shit! I thought, my eyes widening with the realization that I'd been suckered in. Instinctively, I tried to retreat to put any distance I could between the knight and me before whatever counterattack he had in store for me landed. I never had a chance. A heavy metal shield slammed into my chest with the force of a sledgehammer, cracking and breaking countless ribs as it drove the air from my lungs and sent me staggering back, all of my forward momentum lost in a single blow. I managed a single agonizing cough as I struggled to keep balance, a watery sensation suddenly filling my chest. Numb from the sudden turn of events, it was all I could do to stare at the single log entry that had appeared in my combat log. An ether-bound knight critically hits you with Shield Slam 3 for 274 points of damage. The next thing I knew, my entire body was screaming at me in pain, and I was somehow lying on my back a short distance from where I'd been standing, desperately struggling to catch my breath. As my mind slowly cleared and adrenaline caused the pain to fade away, I gradually became aware of loud, clanging footsteps, vaguely sensing that there was something large and blurry approaching me. Blinking rapidly to get rid of the tears that had formed in my eyes, I cleared them just in time to see the ether-bound knight standing over me, its axe raised high in the air. I'm screwed! I realized with sudden clarity as the stunning effects of the knight's shield slam finally began to wear off, leaving my mind too scrambled to cast a spell and my body reacting far too slowly to roll out of the way of its coming attack.
Hold on, Lear!
Halcyon's voice cut through the fog that clouded my mind just as two large balls of magic slammed into the side of the knight, visibly rocking it from side to side.
We're coming!
No sooner did the words fade from the air than a thunderclap of magic took their place, as a wave of azure energy erupted out of nothingness directly in front of the knight, forcing it to take an unsteady step backward to check its balance. Wincing from the proximity of the spell, I felt the searing heat from the spell wash over me, happy to endure a little bit of friendly fire from Halcyon's pyroclap, instead of experiencing the likely life-ending impact of the knight's axe as it sank into my chest. The knight bobbed unsteadily as its damaged leg struggled to keep itself upright under the onslaught of magic, the axe in its hand waving wildly in the air in an attempt to restore its balance. Taking advantage of my temporary stay of execution, I rolled my body to the side and put some distance between me and the heavily armored creature, feeling my lungs protest from the exertion. Once I felt I was at a safe distance, I rolled one more time onto my stomach and let out a wet-sounding cough that sent a spray of blood misting through the air, coating the floor beneath me. Staring at the blood numbly as I struggled to take in a deep breath, a near-deafening shout of rage, followed by the sound of tearing metal and even more shouting voices, forced me to keep moving. Pushing myself up off the ground with a shaking hand, I turned as fast as I could manage back towards the knight, all while coughing up another spray of blood from my damaged lungs.
"Hit the leg!"
Trace's voice boomed over the cacophony of combat that had erupted in the few seconds it had taken me to regain my feet.
"Take it down, then finish it!"
Completing my turn towards the noise, I saw that both Lazarus and Trace had managed to join the fight, or perhaps more aptly in Lazarus's case, rejoin the fight, his body having clearly been healed since the last time that I'd seen him. The pair of half-giants had flanked the now singed-looking knight, keeping the creature contained as Constantine, Alistair, and Amaranth rushed around the floating crystal. Of the three, my familiar was the first to arrive, the powerfully muscled cat lunging forward at Drace's instructions and sinking his thick teeth into the knight's damaged knee. With a shake, I saw him tear the last shreds of metal that held the armor together apart, causing a brief flare of magic to erupt from the wound before the leg finally gave way, sending the knight falling to the ground. No sooner did the creature land than the rest of the party leaped upon it, their weapons flashing remorselessly through the air as they chopped or thrust deep into the undead Erovian's armor, wisps of magic escaping its body with every new tear and puncture. Sensing that the battle was coming to a close, I moved to aid my friends, unwilling to stand idly by and watch while I was still able to contribute, especially when they had all just saved me from what had looked like certain death. It only took me seconds to reach the fallen knight, during which time the party continued to fill the creature's armor with countless holes and scars. Yet for all the damage that they had done, the knight did not want to die peacefully, one of its arms being held in place by Amaranth's teeth, biting down hard on its wrist, the other with Lazarus's sword thrust straight through it, pinning it to the ground. The pair visibly strained as they attempted to keep the creature contained as it thrashed desperately to free itself from their holds.
"Destroy its skull!"
I shouted a heartbeat before I rejoined the party, sidestepping around Drace, who had taken it upon himself to restrain the knight's one remaining leg.
"What do you think we're trying to do, Lear?"
Constantine growled, both him and Alistair coming into view, standing above the flailing knight.
"He's making it a bit difficult, as you can imagine."
Ignoring Constantine's words, I rushed in even closer to help the pair, instantly realizing the extent of their difficulties as the knight constantly shifted its helmeted head to blunt or deflect the weapons that came towards its face, preventing them from taking advantage of the open wound in the metal. However, with its attention fixed solely at keeping the two of them at bay, it left itself completely open for my attack. Lunging forward at the knight, I threw everything I had into my attack, planting my knee directly into its chest as I thrust Splinter downwards through the broken gap in its helmet. I felt a jolt travel up my arm and into my shoulder as the sword tip bit into the knight's skull, the bone standing up to the impact for a split second before all resistance suddenly gave way. With the sound of shattering bone, Splinter sank even deeper into the knight's head, all movement from the creature freezing as it absorbed what had just happened. Then, without any warning at all, the emerald fire that burned within it winked out, and the armor deflated, leaving me kneeling atop an empty shell of metal. With the creature no longer thrashing, silence fell over the chamber, save for our rapid breathing. Breathing a sigh of relief, I gently pulled Splinter free of the now empty helmet before me, pausing to read the two messages that had appeared in the corner of my vision. "You have slain an ether-bound knight. You have gained experience." Chapter 35.
"Kill Stealer!"
Constantine accused as I pushed myself up off the disintegrating form of the ether-bound knight, the body fading away into nothingness and leaving a familiar loot bag in its place.
"I had him!"
You're taking too long, I told Constantine, letting out a ragged cough as I parroted the exact words that I'd heard him use what seemed like a lifetime earlier.
I wanted to kill him, before the sun set today.
Very funny, Constantine grunted while rolling his eyes at my statement, clearly not having missed the reference.
Is everyone okay?
Thrace asked, clearly hoping to put an end to Constantine's and my bickering before it could really take off.
I don't think we lost anyone in that.
We got pretty close,
Halcyon replied amid a chorus of voices as we all accounted for one another and gathered in a large circle.
Thanks for the save there, Lear. A few seconds later,
and it could have all gone differently.
I acknowledged, nodding at Alistair as he went about his post-battle healing duties, laying a glowing hand on my shoulder.
Thanks for the save on your end, too. I thought I was a goner.
No problem, Lear, the mage answered with a shrug. That's what teamwork is for.
Definitely,
I replied with a smile as Halcyon's statement triggered something in my mind.
Hey, speaking of teamwork, did you all notice how uncoordinated all the Aerovians were during the battle? I don't think any of them moved to support one another even once.
Huh, Thrace grunted thoughtfully. Now that you mention it, yeah. They pretty much all fought like individuals. Hell, if I didn't know better, I'd say they actually fought more like robots, completely without emotion at all. All that was left to them was their fighting ability and basic self-preservation.
Well, they were kinda undead-like, right? Caius asked. Maybe not quite the traditional necromancer version of undead, but an ether-warped version of undead.
Maybe that's what the ether-bound prefix of their name means, Lazarus offered with a shrug.
Could be, I agreed, once again reminded about just how little we knew about Aether, even after all of our experiences with it. I'd be really interested to know what caused them to transform into whatever they were.
Maybe we'll find out,
Halcyon said, pointing towards the large crystal that still hovered atop of the dais beside us, showing no reaction to the battle that had been fought around it.
Some of their technology here looks to be intact. There's no telling what we might...
Constantine loudly cleared his throat while giving both Halcyon and me a pointed look.
I know you guys are big on this whole magic and lore thing, which is great, don't get me wrong. But do you guys mind if we start sorting out the loot? I mean, that bag is just sitting there, begging to be opened, and the rest of us are all just standing around.
There was a moment of silence as everyone's attention focused on Constantine, then shifted back towards both Halcyon and me, faint echoes of agreement filtering through the air.
We did just fight three dungeon bosses,
Alistair said, speaking up in a small voice.
So there has to be something nifty inside it,
Drace added, trying and failing to hide a bored tone in his voice.
Ugh. You guys have no patience, I grunted, waving a hand dismissively at the loot bag and inviting Constantine to sort through it.
This coming from the guy who looted the moss snakes while we were all still dealing with the wounded? Sierra asked with a grin on her face as both she and Constantine stepped towards the bag.
You guys had it under control, I replied dismissively. I was just being efficient.
Well, you and Halcyon have the magic and lore conversation under control right now,
Constantine shot back as he untied the bag that had been sitting on the ground and began sorting through it.
Now the rest of us are going to be efficient and see what loot dropped.
Without wasting another second, Constantine then began to pull several items out from the bag, pausing only to hand them over to Sierra or one of the other party members as we all gathered around him to watch, the item descriptions appearing in our vision. Blackened Iron War Mace. Slot Main Hand. Item Class Magical. Item Quality Good, plus 15%. Damage 30 to 45. Crushing. Strength plus 5. Constitution plus 5. Durability 160 out of 160. Weight 2.5 kilograms. Class Any Martial. Level 15. Blackened Iron War Axe. Slot Main Hand. Item Class Magical. Item Quality Good, plus 15%. Damage, 30 to 45, crushing. Strength, plus 5, constitution, plus 5. Durability, 160 out of 160. Weight, 1.5 kilograms. Class, any martial. Level 15. Blackened Iron Assault Shield. Quantity 2. Slot, offhand. Item class, magical. Item quality, good, plus 15%. Armor, 175. Strength, plus 3. Constitution, plus 3. Durability, 180 out of 180.
weight 3 kilograms, class any martial, level 15. Blackened iron war knife. Slot main hand or offhand, item class magical, item quality good, plus 15%. Damage 25 to 40, slashing or piercing. Strength plus 4, agility plus 4. Durability 120 out of 120. Weight 0.5 kilograms, class any martial, level 15.
That's actually a pretty great haul, I exclaimed with surprise as Constantine finally pulled the last item out of the bag. The first time we didn't get any crafting components either.
Considering how brittle and charred the armor that all the Arovians were wearing was, I consider that a good thing, Drace replied, having exchanged both his old weapon and shield for the war mace and assault shield. I don't think even you would have been able to salvage that stuff into something I'd trust my life with. Whatever happened that transformed their bodies, it sure did a number on it.
I guess that's true, I said, looking around the group and seeing that Alistair had laid claim to the other assault shield as well as the war axe, none of the other party members having a use for the melee-oriented weapons. Nice to see that these weapons are enchanted, though, unlike the ones we found upstairs.
The knights and battle mage were probably the leaders of the attacking force, Constantine commented, holding the battle mage's weapon in his hand. Makes sense that they would get the best gear.
Yeah, I agreed, watching the loot bag on the ground disintegrate now that it was empty, its sole purpose for existence having been fulfilled. With the loot out of the way, our attention then shifted back to the chamber that we found ourselves in, all of us splitting up into smaller groups as we wandered off in our own directions. Given each of our magical specializations, it was only natural that Caius, Halcyon, and I grouped together as we explored the room, choosing to start our exploration on the far side of the chamber, where I'd originally seen the pile of shattered crystal.
Whatever was here looks like it exploded from within, Halcyon said to both Caius and me, as the three of us scanned through the crystalline debris. Look at the wall. You can see bits and pieces of crystal embedded in the stone.
Good eye, I replied, inspecting the pockmarked wall in more detail, and seeing that it also appeared cracked and burnt as if it were exposed to intense heat. Maybe it was another set of crystals.
That would then explain these metal fragments here, Caius noted, bending down to pick up a flat, inch-thick fragment of metal that had several runes inscribed on it, and showed it to the both of us.
Looks kind of similar to the rings on the still-intact crystal over there.
I said thoughtfully as Caius turned the broken piece of metal over in his hand. I wonder what they're for.
Your guess is as good as mine, Halcyon replied as he bent down and picked up 2 metal fragments from the ground. Maybe it has something to do with regulating the ether stored in the crystal, or somehow shifting ether from its liquid state that we see in the ley line into whatever state it is in the crystal.
Ether is a good theory, I stated, glancing at the 2 shards of metal that Halcyon was holding, and seeing that both of them bore similar runes to the piece that Caius had picked up. Though I wish we could read whatever runes were inscribed on them.
Donovan might be able to if we bring him back enough pieces, Halcyon pointed out. Or one of the other mages, assuming we trust them enough to show them.
Trust being the key word in that statement, I replied doubtfully, scanning the ground and finding another metal disc fragment lying amid the crystalline rubble. But I think you're on to something. If we can recover enough pieces of these shattered discs and reassemble an intact one,
then we can try building our own ether crystal using the crystals that we recovered from the tower, Caius exclaimed excitedly.
I don't really know what we'd use them for yet, but we could figure that out afterwards.
Ether crystal.
Halcyon repeated as if testing the word.
I like that.
Worst comes to the worst, we can also try copying the runes on the discs around the still-floating crystal, I said, enjoying the pair's excitement as I stooped down to pick up the metal shard that I'd seen earlier. But that'd require us to draw it out on paper, or figure out a way to disassemble the thing. If we can find enough pieces to rebuild a disc back in Oldford, I can then use them to make a mold and cast it as one piece rather than handcrafting from a sketch.
Sounds like a plan to me.
Caius said enthusiastically, the three of us then beginning to sift through the piles of broken crystal in search of the metal disc fragments. With the three of us working in tandem, it only took us a few minutes to scour the area, recovering over 3 dozen different fragments of the inch-thick metal, the largest concentrations of the pieces appearing to center around each individual dais that the crystals had once sat upon. Taking pains to keep each collection of fragments separate, depending on which dais it was found at, we split the shards between ourselves, ensuring that we didn't accidentally mix pieces together that were found in a different location.
It was going to be a tough enough puzzle reassembling the fragments of the discs, and we didn't want to make it any harder on ourselves than it was already going to be.
Hey, are you guys done digging through all that?
Sierra's voice called out from across the chamber.
Because we're blocked in here by another door, and none of us wants to poke any of the crystals on this box without one of you checking it for magic.
You mean taking the blame if something goes wrong?
I called back, straightening from my bent-over position and looking in the direction of Sierra's voice, which was coming from the other side of the crystal.
You already used that one today, Lear,
Sierra said, sounding disappointed in my reply.
You need to work on some new material.
Doesn't make it any less true,
I exclaimed while turning to look both at Caius and Halcyon with a raised eyebrow. I think we've found all the fragments that we're going to find, Caius replied, sensing my silent question. If there are any pieces left, they're too small to find, or buried in this wall somewhere.
But we don't know for sure until we try reassembling the discs,
Halcyon added, as the three of us left the damaged portion of the chamber and began walking towards the other side, passing by a coiled amaranth who had decided to take up residence directly under the large ether-infused crystal and was basking in its light as he would the sun.
Don't fall asleep, I said to the cat, seeing an azure-colored eye open to look in my direction. We're going to be moving soon.
Amaranth grunted unintelligibly in response, before closing his eye again and lying his chin down on his paws.
Wake me then. It is nice and warm here.
Shaking my head at the cat, I turned my attention back towards the other side of the room, seeing that the entire party had gathered around the strange rectangular pillar I'd spotted earlier.
This is the only thing that looks like anything resembling a switch, Sierra told us as we arrived. Aside from a few stone workbenches over there, there really doesn't seem to be that much in this room, even before whatever happened to this place happened.
I see, I replied, scanning the other half of the chamber, seeing both the workbenches that Sierra had just mentioned, as well as a door, identical to the one we'd seen upstairs, set into the far wall.
Best guess I have is that either this place didn't get a lot of traffic, Lazarus said, or more likely they got far enough warning of the attack that they cleared out as much stuff as they could.
And locked the door behind them, I added, looking back towards Sierra, then at the crystal-filled pillar.
Looks like it, the red-haired elf replied.
Well, let's see what we can do about that, I said while activating True Sight and seeing several of the crystals set into the pillar begin to glow.
Well, whatever this thing is, it's definitely active.
I'll say. Caius muttered as both he and Halcyon moved up to stand beside me, the rest of the party backing away a step to give us room.
So, Halcyon began, waving a hand at the alien array of crystals set into the pillar. Any idea where to start? Poke one of them and see what happens?
I guess,
I replied with a shrug, counting 7 active crystals on the pillar, with another 9 crystals lying dormant. It seemed that whatever method that the Nefar had used to label their switches, or crystals in this case, had died with them, leaving no visible indication to what any of them did.
I don't have any better ideas, to be honest.
You know we can hear you guys, right?
Constantine called out from behind us, his voice sounding nervous.
You aren't exactly filling us with a lot of confidence right now.
Relax, I said soothingly, waving a hand in a reassuring manner over my shoulder, where everyone could see, while picking an active crystal at random on the pillar and reaching out to touch it with the other, feeling a familiar warmth travel up my arm.
I'm a professional at this sort of stuff. Don't worry.
There was a short pause as my hand rested on the crystal. Then, without any warning at all, the room went completely dark as the azure light emanating from the crystal suddenly vanished, plunging us all into complete darkness.
Yep, this is about what I expected.
Sierra was the first to comment.
Are you sure you know what you're doing there?
Lazarus's voice followed a second afterward.
What happened?
Amaranth asked sleepily in my mind.
Where did the warmth and light go?
Just hang on a second, I replied loudly, seeing that all the crystals on the pillar had gone dark.
Terrified that I'd broken the device, I took my hand off the crystal and reached out to touch one of the others, hoping that I could undo whatever I'd done earlier.
Shit. Did the whole thing die?
Halcyon whispered from beside me, reaching out to also touch one of the crystals on the pillar we had grouped around.
Looks like it,
Caius whispered back, going as far as to poke several of the crystals with his fingers.
It almost looks like it turned itself off. Who the hell puts an off switch right in the middle of whatever this thing is? I said under my breath as the three of us went through each of the crystals on the pillar, testing to see if any of them elicited any sort of reaction. Minutes passed as we continued to poke and prod the crystals in an attempt to reactivate the pillar and undo whatever it was that I'd managed to do. But no matter what we tried, there was no visible reaction to our efforts. With every second that passed, it became more and more difficult for the three of us to hide our frustration at the lack of results. Until I finally threw up my hands in the air, ready to admit defeat. Okay, this... The words were barely out of my mouth before, once again, without any visible signal, the room suddenly illuminated itself, as if some distant switch had been flipped, the familiar azure light from the large crystal set in the center of the chamber resuming its bright glow and banishing the darkness. Should work, I finished, trying to hide my surprise while turning my head to look around the chamber, as several white lights set high in the ceiling above us also activated, shifting the room from a deep azure tint that had been there just seconds earlier to a near daytime brightness.
Well, that's better, I guess,
Constantine commented as I turned to look in the party's direction, all of them visibly squinting from the change in light.
Must have needed a chance to reboot?
Halcyon muttered quietly, sounding slightly unsure as he spoke.
Looks like the crystals are slowly reactivating one by one, too.
I honestly have no idea, Hal, I replied, turning around to look at the pillar and seeing that nearly all of them were now steadily flashing with a magical glow. But seeing what happened last time, I'm a little hesitant to poke it again.
I know what you mean, Lear, but we're gonna need...
Error in display system detected!
A distorted mental voice rang through my head without warning, causing me to flinch and look at the pillar in surprise.
Switching to mental communication mode.
Did that thing just talk to us?
Caius asked, the rest of the party behind us immediately falling silent, surprised at the voice that had just appeared in our heads.
Whatever it was, I heard it too.
Sierra said, her footsteps echoing across the floor as she moved closer to us.
Same here,
Trace added, a shuffling sound indicating that he too was following Sierra.
What did you guys do?
No clue,
Halcyon replied with a shrug, just as the voice echoed through our heads once more.
I think it's some sort of leftover technology.
Alert! Emergency lockdown procedures are in effect. Catastrophic failure of ley line tap detected. Security systems are currently active.
The voice announced with urgency.
Time since event, 550 years, 10 months, 3 weeks, 1 day, 7 hours, 54 minutes, 34 seconds. Warning, based on elapsed time, ether ignition is believed to be imminent. Please evacuate the facility immediately unless assigned to a containment team.
Huh. I grunted as the mental voice temporarily faded from my mind, then glanced around at the party that had grouped up behind me, seeing all their surprised expressions. It seemed that the large floating ether crystal wasn't the only piece of technology that had survived the destruction of the ruin. Maybe it's a security system of some sort, I thought to myself, making the best guess I could, based on what it had just said. No sooner did the thought cross my mind that I remembered the security system back at the transport hub, and how we had been forced to destroy it after it went haywire and tried to kill us, if somewhat indirectly. Hopefully this one isn't hostile.
Well, I guess we know when this place was destroyed now,
Halcyon said, breaking the silence as we all processed what the voice had just told us.
Hard to believe that this place was just buried under here for so long without anyone finding it, and bits and pieces of it are still active.
I think that's only because there was no one left to find it,
Sierra answered with a sad note in her voice. Or more likely because the Arovians either didn't have time to or didn't want to dig into an active installation to repair the ley line right in the middle of a war, I offered, and instead they used whatever they built at the tower and the annulment sphere to keep the ley line in check.
Great, Constantine stated. That worked for them, but now what do we do?
Because we can't exactly get out of here now, short of dying, that is, and I think pretty much all of us want to avoid that.
Yeah, that'd be nice, Caius agreed. I'm pretty close to level 15 now, and I'd really rather not have to deal with an experience debt from a death penalty, not to mention the skill loss.
I think we're all on board for that, Lazarus added dryly.
Well, we're open to any ideas on how to get this thing talking.
Halcyon said while waving a hand at the pillar. Hang on a second, I replied thoughtfully, an idea popping into my head. It said mental communication mode before, and the way it spoke to us wasn't that much different than the way that Amaranth and I speak to one another. I can maybe try reaching out to it and see where that gets us.
So you want to think at that stone pillar full of crystals and hope it replies to you?
Constantine asked me dubiously. No, I want to think at the stone pillar full of crystals and sweet-talk it into opening the door for us, I replied while rolling my eyes at the rogue.
Oh, well, that makes much more sense then, Constantine said in a sarcastic tone. Try open sesame. Maybe that'll do it.
If you prefer, I can try touching one of the crystals again, I offered, reaching out blindly towards the pillar behind me.
Try that mental thing first, Sierra cut in quickly. If that doesn't work, then you can try playing with the lights again.
Works for me, I said, turning away from the group and looking towards what I was beginning to suspect was the Nefarian equivalent of a computer. Pausing for a second to consider how I would even begin communicating with it, I decided not to overthink it and simply willed my thoughts in its direction, the same way I separated my internal thoughts to myself versus those I wanted Amaranth to hear.
Hello?
I sent cautiously towards what I now mentally thought of as a machine, not knowing any better way of introducing myself.
Mind print is not recognized.
The very same distorted voice I'd heard before filtered directly into my head, causing me to flinch at its mental volume.
Resorting to secondary identification mechanism. State your name and purpose.
It worked, I told the group, glancing back towards them with a smile on my face before turning to face the pillar once more, hoping that my idea would play out and that the machine wouldn't question it too much. Lyrian Rassler, I sent, crossing my fingers as I spoke. I'm part of the containment team. There was a long pause as the Nefarian device considered my answer, leaving me staring at the crystals and waiting nervously for a response.
There is no record of your name listed on a containment team,
the distorted voice replied.
An identity cannot be verified.
Of course I wouldn't be on a local list, I told the machine without missing a beat. It's been over 550 years since we were forced to abandon this place. Everyone on record has died from old age.
Checking statement,
it replied to me once more, before going dormant for several seconds.
Report. Situation has been deemed plausible. Last contact with previous containment team was 550 years, 10 months, 3 weeks, 3 hours, 36 minutes, 18 seconds ago. All attempts to reach the team has failed. It is logical to assume that they are now deceased.
They only survived little more than a day after the ley line ruptured, I noted, giving a quick mental calculation based on the Nefarian computer's report. They must have known they wouldn't be able to get out of here. The door in this chamber is locked, I told the machine, deciding to see if I could entice it into helping us out. We need to have access to the rest of the facility if we're going to be able to access the damage and try to repair the ley line.
Unable to comply,
the voice barked almost instantaneously.
As per procedure, the facility is in lockdown mode until all ethereal anomalies have been eradicated.
That's what we're here to do, I replied enthusiastically, sensing a track that I could take. If I could convince the machine that we were here to help, then maybe we could find a way forward and out of this room. We've already cleared all the, ethereal anomalies from this room, but unless you can open the door for us, we can't go any further.
Checking statement.
The machine's rote reply had my stomach suddenly twisting in knots as I considered what we would do if I wasn't able to get it to open the door going forward.
Report. All previously detected ethereal anomalies in this chamber have been eradicated. Updating. Warning, 2 new ethereal anomalies have now been detected in this chamber. Lockdown cannot be lifted until all ethereal anomalies are contained or eradicated.
Oh, shit, I cursed as I glared at the crystal, not having even paused to consider that the device would detect Amaranth and me as being ether warped.
What's wrong? Sierra asked, her voice sounding worried.
It can sense that Amaranth and I are ether-warped and won't open the door yet, I replied while trying to think of a way around the machine's statement.
Hang on a second. The 2 new ethereal anomalies you're detecting are part of the containment team, I sent to the device. They are not a threat, and we have them under control.
Checking statement.
the Nefarian security intoned once more.
Unable to verify. Clearance from someone ranked supervisor or higher, including any members listed on a containment team, must be obtained before proceeding.
There is no one else alive in this facility to grant clearance, and I am the containment team leader, I said to the machine, wondering if it would allow me to approve my own access. I will accept the risk.
Checking statement,
it replied once again before falling silent for a few seconds.
Query, is there another containment team here with you?
There is, I replied, suddenly hopeful, realizing that it must be referring to Freya and her group. We split up to ensure that we cleared the facility as quickly as possible.
Understood,
the device stated, falling silent for a moment.
Report. Ad hoc provisional access deemed appropriate, given the emergency situation. Lockdown will be lifted sequentially as you and your containment teams progress through the facility. Ensure that any ethereal anomalies encountered are eradicated or contained. Report progress at the console near the next ether matrix on your route.
Without another word, the door at the end of the chamber began to grind open, causing all of us to spin and glance in its direction as it gradually revealed a pitch-black passageway that visibly descended further downwards. As the door slowly opened, I felt a wave of relief shoot through me, along with seeing a skill notification followed by a quest update appear out of the corner of my eye. Your skill in wordplay has increased to level 13. Quest update, the ruptured ley line. After excavating the collapsed passage, you and your party have confirmed your earlier suspicions and have discovered another level to the Nefarian ruins, leading even deeper underground, possibly towards the ley line. Since entering the ruins, you have encountered twisted remains belonging to both the Arovians and Nefar, who have been trapped within, each of whom appears to have been warped by magic. During your exploration of the ruin, you have managed to make contact with a still-functioning Nefarian device, successfully convincing it that you are part of a containment team sent to clear the ruins of ethereal anomalies and repair the ley line. As such, the device has agreed to unlock the route to the next ether matrix. Attempt to excavate the collapsed passage and see where it leads, 1 out of 1. Gain access to the Nefarian ruin, 1 out of 1. Secure the next ether matrix, 0 out of 1. Ley line sealed. 0 out of 1. I must have missed an earlier update, I thought to myself, noting that there was a completed stage in the quest that I hadn't seen earlier. Though considering how this day is shaping up, that's not surprising. With a mental shrug, I dismissed both the notification and quest update from my vision and took a step towards the door, flashing a smile back towards the rest of the party that looked towards me with surprise, none of them clearly having expected that my idea of thinking at the crystal pillar would have worked.
Well, I prompted, motioning for everyone to follow me. Shall we see what else this dungeon has in store for us?
Chapter 36.
Ah!
I let out a brief shout of surprise and pain as I felt my feet leave the ground, a blast of intense energy sending me cartwheeling through the air. I barely had the chance to process what had happened before my body, and very shortly afterward my head collided with smooth, unforgiving stone, leaving me lying on the floor, rattled and staring upwards at a new combat log entry. An unstable ether-bound shade hits you with ether bomb for 81 points of damage.
Damn!
I cursed internally, reflexively sitting up despite how badly my head was spinning.
Where did that come from?
Lear!
Dre shouted over the incessant voices that echoed through our minds, the near-deafening cacophony not having changed in volume or content since the encounter had begun.
We need you guys back here, now!
Us guys?
I asked dumbly, feeling my brain slowly start to function again as it recovered from its most recent impact on the ground. Glancing around me, my blurry vision sharpened, revealing both Constantine and Lazarus lying on the floor a short distance away from me, appearing just as dazed and confused as I felt. Movement from ahead of me caused my eyes to shift from the pair and focus on several ghost-like shapes that were running towards us, my mind gradually rebooting as the last few seconds of battle came rushing back.
The three of us have been trying to break through a group of shades,
I recalled as I forced myself back up onto my feet while yelling something unintelligible at both Lazarus and Constantine in hopes of getting them moving. Standing up, I reflexively scanned through the advancing attackers, carefully reading the four tags that appeared in my vision and remembering that we were supposed to look out for one type of shade in particular.
Ether-bound shade level 12.
No unstable shades in this batch.
I breathed with relief as I leaped forward to meet the oncoming group, sending a shocking touch into Splinter's edge and swiping it through the lead shade's outstretched arm, feeling no resistance as the blade passed through the ghostly limb and severed it from the apparition's body.
That last one came out of nowhere. I never even saw it coming.
Sidestepping a lunging slash from another shade and repaying the favor in kind, I shook off the last of the cobwebs that still clung to my mind and returned to near full awareness, unable to stop myself from replaying just how we had gotten ourselves into this situation. After the Nefarian security system had finished opening the door for us, we had continued in our exploration of the ruin, delving even deeper and descending several more stories downward as we reached another set of switchbacks. But unlike the still intact portion of the ruin that we passed,